You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, May 11th, 2022. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Tony DeLorio, Secretary-Treasurer of the Teamsters Local 685, who are now organizing a unionization effort of Amy's Kitchen, frozen food titans. Also on the program today, India Walton, former mayoral candidate of Buffalo, in Buffalo, I should say, now senior strategic organizer at Roots Action, on the impending decision of loan forgiveness for student debt. Also on the program today, House passes $40 billion for Ukraine. Every single Democrat voting in favor. Meanwhile, COVID relief languishes. More conservative leaks to lock in Roe v. Wade overturning. In Texas, its abortion ban has now inhibited care for miscarriages. And in some really difficult news, Susan Collins sounds the alarm over a chalk message protest in front of her house, ladies
and
gentlemen.
Prayers.
Meanwhile, inflation still blistering, but April showed a slight drop from its peak in March. Lisa Cook confirmed to the Fed Reserve. Palestinian-American journalist shot and killed by Israeli forces in occupied West Bank. Federal judge and New York's congressional map redraw. Going to have major implications as to the Democrats' ability to hold the House. Speaking of holding elections, top Republican lawyer had provided a game plan and lobbied Pennsylvania lawmakers to ignore the 2020 vote. Target workers in Christiansburg, Virginia, look to unionize. And the National Labor Relations Board does it again, demands Starbucks rehire 7 baristas fired for organizing in Memphis. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us. It is, as Emma Vigeland always says,
hump day.
There you go.
You needed the sound effect where you, let's try it again, the thunder.
Oh, okay. Yeah, go ahead.
It is hump day. All right, you went a little nuts.
Matt and I were getting into a slight war there. We've got a lot to get to today, so let's get to it. Just a couple of notes. One listener writes in, Peter, who has a long experience in micro business, also very familiar with the work of Dr. Eunice. In Bangladesh and Grameen, and criticized the interview we did the other day with Lily Geismer because of the critique that Geismer had of the Clintons in terms of their support for micro lending and these type of micro business work. And we should say, I thought she made it clear to us. But she made it clear that she didn't have an issue with the micro business stuff and said that, you know, that it certainly had success in Bangladesh, but that it is not a substitute for a broader plan. She said as an addendum to an actually government, functioning government that is providing for people, she said it's great. I mean, that was the way that it certainly was relayed in the book, and I thought she had articulated to us, but I just want to make that clear. Maybe head back and listen for that. The issue was not that that micro-lending and other such microfinance was bad, but that it was no substitute, which in some respect and he writes, while Clinton and others may have had the back of their minds to undermine the social safety net, this was never what U.S. microorganizations had in mind. Yes, but the people in charge of the government are the ones who are making this assessment. And it wasn't so much that they were looking to undermine the social safety net. They cut the social safety net and suggested that this was a replacement. And not the micro lenders, not the people involved in the microfinance. I'm talking about the Clintons.
The government.
We know what they did to so-called with welfare reform. So I think that was the point. But appreciate
it's similar to the UBI debate, right? Universal basic income. I was not in favor of Andrew Yang's proposal for it during the presidential election because it was presented as an alternative to social programs as opposed to a supplement.
Yes.
Microfinance, UBI, things that can be supplementary just can involve cuts to existing social programs.
Exactly. And not even cuts. I think, you know, it was like for the Clinton administration, it was an attempt to completely reorient the relationship between government and people.
Yeah.
There was very much a we're going to get government out of the way type of mentality. Also, email from listener Kathy, who sent this picture and suggesting what I should do when I'm in Boston. And this was wonderful. She said, you might want to check out Barry Crimmon Square. And there it is. I had no idea they had renamed this, sort of like block intersection, Barry Crimmon Square. This is in Inman Square. I lived, I would say, a block and a half from here with John Benjamin. It was a very unfortunate experience. The man never cleaned anything. At one point, we had to throw out the dishes. But the Ding Ho was gone at that point. But it was a famous comedy club, a room that Barry Crimmins went in. It was a Chinese restaurant. He went in, said, can I do comedy here? And this is where Stephen Wright, Bobcat Goldthwait, Lenny Clark, others got their start in that room, and it was just the back of a Chinese restaurant. Tony V, others. And so I may go check that out, go back to my old stomping grounds. Of course, Cambridge, this is in Cambridge, actually, right outside of Inman Square. Sort of part of Inman Square, I guess. I have a good idea where it is, not exactly. But just a reminder, you got 5 days before we are headed to Boston. Check it out. Boston's going to be on fire. El Fuego. Particularly with everything going on with the Celtics. It's going to be fun. Good time to be there. The weather's going to be gorgeous.
And Bruins are in the playoffs. You know that, right?
They're
going to lose. They're about to lose this series,
mixed feelings.
Kind of last dance for that whole group, I think.
All right, so check it out. You can go to Majority Live to get tickets to the Boston show. You are going to regret it if you do not see it. I can promise you that right now. We will get to that story about Susan Collins because it is extraordinary. But we are now watching, and there's also more on the leaks that is coming out of the conservative camp at the Supreme Court. They are meeting tomorrow for the first time since the brief was leaked at the Supreme Court. But all of this is, you know, this stuff is, it is both a distraction, but it is important to walk through because all of this stuff needs to be batted down and addressed because we need to be primed for when this decision is actually real and not hypothetical. and the sense of aggrievement and false aggrievement that exists goes away so that people can be aware that what is going on. Here is Senator Steve Daines in the U.S. Senate. He is the senator from Montana. And the interesting thing about Montana is apparently there is a constitutional amendment protecting a woman's right to choose in Montana. So there is a movement in Montana right now to get rid of all of the Supreme Court justices there so that they can change the ruling that has taken place in their state Supreme Court. But I got news for you. If this is going to be the nature of the arguments, they're going to have to somehow get all of those Supreme Court justices off because this ain't going to cut it. And it really is fascinating. The level, I mean, these people have been against a woman's right to choose for 40 or 50 years, and they still can't come up with a better argument?
Law. If you were to take or destroy the eggs of a sea turtle, now I said the eggs, not the hatchlings, that's also a penalty, but the eggs. The criminal penalties are severe, up to a $100,000 fine and a year in prison. Now why? Why do we have laws in place that protect the eggs of a sea turtle or the eggs of eagles? Because when you destroy an egg, you're killing a preborn baby sea turtle or a preborn baby eagle. Yet when it comes to a preborn human baby, rather than a sea turtle, that baby will be stripped of all protections in all 50 states under the Democrats' bill they'll be voting on tomorrow. Is that what the America, the left wants? I would ask my Democratic colleagues if the...
That's how I think of my eggs, you know, every day. Let's just, when I'm not obviously chewing up their food for them, then vomiting into their mouths right. Once they do hatch. I mean, people don't know this, but women have to do that every day. It's really difficult to maintain, keep the eggs warm, have to feed them every day, and then eventually I have to kill them because I'm a good liberal.
It is the level of stupidity here, and there's so many different directions in which you can take this, assess this stupidity. First off, here is a picture of these are turtle eggs, right? Are these turtle eggs?
These are
turtle eggs. Okay. I want people to just focus on this.
They're pretty.
Turtle eggs. What do they look like? All right. Now let's move to the eagle eggs. Yeah. Okay. Now let's look at the eggs in a woman. Now, the reason why you can't quite see the shape of the eggs is because they are actually in the woman.
Whereas, why'd you pick that picture?
We picked a stock footage image of a proud woman.
Okay, there you go. And so just go back. I just want people to see the difference here. These eggs exist outside of another being. Okay? They're outside of another being. Now, of course, then the question is, and then I guess like, so that might be a difference in why we protect eggs that are outside of a being. Now, we should also be clear. We don't have a picture of chicken eggs, which we do not protect. We do not protect the eggs of chickens or ducks.
Yeah.
And just to say, like, we do protect the eggs of the women, too. I can't just go up to a woman and, you know, withdraw some eggs, for instance.
Oh, yes. That's also true.
Or kick her in the uterus and then maybe jostle some of those eggs. Also, eggs are not always fertilized.
Well, okay. Now, wait a second.
See, but this they
is the
could
thing.
Be.
This is the thing. This is the thing that I think, you know, is important to break this down, because it's easy to just simply say, this guy's an idiot and we shouldn't listen to him. But he's telling us something. A, he's an idiot. But B, he's also telling us, and of course, I should just say turtles and eagles, they're endangered. That's why we protect their eggs as opposed to, say, chicken eggs, which many people eat.
Robin eggs.
I'm sure Steve Daines with us has never had a bacon, egg, and cheese in his life.
But I'm not convinced that he's comparing the eggs of these, mammals and reptiles with human eggs just because he's stupid. because they have already gone from, we're going to protect the babies, in quote, before they're conceived, when the egg is just fertilized. Remember, conception happens after the fertilized egg is embedded in the uterus, in the wall of the uterus. Now they have gone to just a fertilized egg, and here the guy is making the argument, eggs, period.
Yep.
And we are already seeing in Texas the implications of the Texas ban, where drugs that are used so that when a woman has a miscarriage.
And one in 10, that article, 1 in 10 pregnancies are miscarried. So this is incredibly common.
1 in 10 pregnancies are miscarriage, and a certain percentage of those, the embryo, the mass, the tissue at that point, sometimes comes out on its own and sometimes it doesn't. And these same drugs, which are used as medical for medical abortions, are also used to make sure, in terms of drugs, that mass is out of the woman's body. And those drugs are now starting to become unavailable because pharmacies are afraid to carry them because they don't want to get sued for $10,000.
For aiding and abetting an abortion. If the woman says, I've had a miscarriage, I need this. Well, how do we know that you're not seeking an abortion and then we're legally liable?
The whole point being that, A, they don't care about women's health, period. No pun intended. And B, when they start talking about a woman's eggs, it's not just because they're idiots. It's also because they want total control of the reproductive system of women. And that doesn't end with outlawing abortions. And it doesn't end with just fertilized eggs. They're going to continue on and on.
Because if eggs have to be, if eggs in and of themselves are the same thing as, you know, turtle eggs for endangered, if they're treated the same way pre and post fertilization and embedding, then that means IUDs are the same thing as an abortion. The morning after pill is the same thing as an abortion.
Contraceptive pill.
Right. Every form of birth control for
IUDs
the most part.
IUDs are already out when you talk about fertilized eggs.
Yeah.
But when you just talk about eggs, you're talking about contraception.
Right.
All forms of
contraception. All hormonal contraception that the woman can control. Man wants to wear a condom. I don't want to fertilize you today. That's fine. That's my prerogative.
Well, boys will be boys.
Yeah.
You got to let them go. In a moment, we're going to be talking to... have our first guest, Tony DeLario will be with us from Secretary Treasurer of the Teamsters Local 665, who are organizing workers at Amy's Kitchen, the big frozen food behemoth. But before we get there, word from our sponsor today. But this is such an easy one for me. Literally had it for breakfast. For a lot of folks, cereal, one of the best parts of being a kid. But when you grow up, you realize like, oh, I don't think I should start my day with a bowl of sugar.
Yeah.
That's probably not healthy. Well, Magic Spoon has the amazing flavors that you love, but without all the bad stuff. And it's amazing as a midnight snack before bed, or frankly, for me, at 4:30 when I wake up every morning at 4:30 or 5:30. For whatever reason, I go and I'll have a bowl of Magic Spoon. It has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving. It's only 140 calories a serving. It's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, and low-carb. And you can build your own box for them to ship you. Available flavors to build, your very own custom bundle, cocoa, fruity, frosted, peanut butter, cookies and cream. Like, as I'm reading this, I'm literally tasting them. For me, cocoa and peanut butter are the big ones there. Fruity and frosted, my kids love. Cookies and cream, also a fan of my loved by my children, as is maple waffle, blueberry, cinnamon, which is my all-time favorite, and the new newly reformulated Honey Nut flavor will now be added to Magic Spoon's permanent collection. It has 1 gram of sugar, and the Honey Nut is sweet. I mean, it's literally sweet, but it's also delicious. That may have edged out cocoa for me.
Whoa.
I know. This is big.
That's historic.
That is how, and I basically get set in my ways. I think people know that. But it's delicious. Honey Nut flavor is great. If you haven't tried that, try it out. Now, I'll also say this. I knew that it was going to be added permanently because I am on their VIP list.
Whoa.
Yep. Which I just got by putting my phone in, and then they text. I think anyway.
Okay, so other people can be on the VIP list if they so choose. All right.
Go to magicspoon.com/majority report. Grab a custom bundle of cereal. Be sure to use the promo code Majority Report at checkout, and you save $5 off your order. Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with 100% happiness guarantee. If you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/majority report. Use the code Majority Report to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode. Okay, I want to welcome to the program Tony DeLorio. He's the Secretary Treasurer of the Teamsters Local 665. Tony, welcome to the program. I'm here with Emma Viglin.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, tell us, Amy's Kitchen, and I had to look it up, but as soon as I looked it up, I realized, like, oh, I've had this before, or, you know, like...
I see this label everywhere. I mean, at least here in Brooklyn, it's in every grocery store.
Oh, yeah. Mac and cheese, and then the frozen pizza. Those are the things. The frozen mac and cheese, the frozen pizza. My kids love that stuff, and it's easy to eat.
Those pizza poppers are, like, I get the pepperoni kind. It's a staple of my grocery order, gotta say.
Easy to make, but it turns out that the folks who are actually making it are doing so in conditions that are not... that are not good. They've had some problems with OSHA. Just tell us sort of the backstory here before you guys were contacted to get involved here.
Sure. So yeah, and exactly. You know, we all know the products, and don't forget the burritos, another popular choice for folks. And yeah, you're right. They're everywhere in big stores like, you know, supermarkets, Whole Foods, and you'll find them in a local liquor store. You know, they have a little section of frozen. You'll find Amy's products there. So they are everywhere. The background is the main facility, which is in Santa Rosa, California. We had some folks, some workers, dozens of workers that had reached out to us several months ago about, the, you know, interested in forming a union. And the first thing we did is, you know, we said, okay, what, you know, what's the issues and typical union issues, what we like to call meat and potatoes. Everybody obviously wants, you know, better wages, health care, some sort of retirement security. Well, when we kind of did our investigation and assessment of the unit, we were actually so appalled by the working conditions and what was happening to these folks at this facility that we quickly threw the flag in and just said, we're not making this a union drive, especially in the onset, just for the fact of the timing, you know, to go through the whole process with the labor board or whatnot and to negotiate a contract. And we decided to do a full media blitz and point out all these awful things that they're doing to these workers. And that's exactly what we did. And we didn't want to make it a union issue. We know that they're trying to say that, you know, the union's in here bullying, trying to do a top-down deal. It's actually a humanitarian/community issue. And we thought it was important for everybody to see the way that these workers are betraying. And I've come out publicly over and over again and said, it's modern day slavery of what they do with these workers.
What, okay, so how many workers are we talking about in this facility? And then we'll talk about, you know, do we have any sense of what's happening in other facilities? Do they have other facilities? But sure. what kind of you say it's modern day slavery. What's going on there?
Yeah, so at this location specifically in Santa Rosa, their biggest plant where most of these products come from, you're talking about a total of about 600 plus employees in which – about 450 of those would actually be rank and file, meaning they could be organized. And so what's, you know, basically the production line and the injuries, and you're right, we did file a Cal OSHA complaint. We're just being advocates right now on behalf of these workers at Amy's, which That report should come out later this month. They've been out there. We know two different occasions checking out the facility for all the you know, outrageous things that are happening. And they've been hit with five Cal OSHA complaints in the last 5 years that paid out over $100,000, but it's never been exposed what we've just recently done. So, you know, for instance, the production line, you know, it used to be 18,000 items roughly per day. It's up to 25,000. So these workers can't even keep up with the work on the assembly line. They're, you know,
with the same number of workers.
Correct. And that's, and I'm glad you brought that. Yeah, exactly. Without increasing the working staff, without increasing the pay, they're at minimum wage. And then the issue is when they get injured, these workers pay a ridiculous premium, anywhere from the $400 to $600 premium per month for their medical plan. Now this is whether you go or not, they're on the hook for that, right? And then if they do seek medical services, then they're going to get hit with another bill of a few hundred bucks. So they're even afraid to go to the doctors because they know they can't afford another bill on top of that. So they're working injured. You know, we have workers that they're working with a sling on because, you know, they've hurt their arm on the job and they're being sent back to work because another issue is there's a urgent care facility down the street from that facility that Amy's Kitchen is in cahoots with. And they basically send these people back to work. And if they can't work the assembly line, they'll say, okay, you have one arm, go and wipe down these tables for 8 hours a day. I mean, it's just outrageous what's happening. The majority of these employees are middle-aged Latina women who are immigrants. They're taking total advantage of them. And once we got into, you know, once they got wind that we were involved, they've hired union busters, but they did do a normal anti-union tactic of, they did give them all a $2 raise. And that's common because they want to make the union go away and kind of, in other words, pay them off. And so they're just not buying it. So, but we're proud that we, you know, the second we got in the door, they got a $2 raise because of what we're doing, but we're not stopping, you know, at a $2 raise. And what's funny is, a few of, depending on their demographics of whether they have a family plan or, you know, spouse, children, whatnot. So with that $2 raise, if you kind of do the quick math, you know, so they basically got, you know, $320, right, a month. If you do $2 a month based on whatever, 160 hours. Well, some of them, their health insurance went up $400 right after. So they actually lost $80. So when Amy's Kitchen is going around saying, oh, we gave everybody a $2 raise. Well, yeah, when you do, you know, combine everything, they actually lost in the deal because they raised their subpar premium for the medical service that they have.
I just want to highlight what you said about the 18,000 to 25,000.
Sure. Right?
I mean, this is a huge, I mean, their revenue is pretty huge is my understanding, right?
Right. Record-breaking profits over the last during, you know, they're one of the ones that made out during COVID. Absolutely.
But what's extraordinary is, like, you know, this is not, and this is a professionalized company. I mean, they, at one point they started out of their garage, but that was like 30, 40 years ago. The idea that they would have a workforce that had an extra 25% capacity. In other words, we know what we need to run this show. The idea that I would have two extra people in here just hanging out for years, doing nothing, that's the equivalent of me all of a sudden adding, you know, an extra, like, I don't know, 6-8 hours of programming a week. They would not have had that many employees that could do that extra work for that long and been this profitable. This is just really squeezing. This is like the functional equivalent of like having their workforce, but having them do the exact same amount of work and just, they're just squeezing more productivity out of these people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the reason is, I don't know, I don't think they could fit any more people on this assembly line. But they obviously, as you said, have gotten so popular and their outreach has been all over the country, and they could care less about, you know, the amount of work and pressure they're putting on these poor folks, like I said, that already receive poverty wages. Another thing that they had done is when we complained that the assembly line was going too fast and this is why the injuries, they for 2 weeks cut it down to 21,000 units about a month ago. and now they're back up to 25,000. So they're just kind of going with the flow. When another article comes out, they, you know, they have a, if you look at the history over the last couple of months, they originally wouldn't reply to anything, wouldn't any statement, anything we were saying, they wouldn't reply. Then they hired union busters to intimidate and try to persuade these workers not to seek our help. And now they're just kind of trying to combat everything that we say. And they're kind of just going along and trying to make changes temporarily. And then they end up, you know, reverting back to what they're doing. But you hit it on the head when you said they started out, because their whole motto, you know, is this organic food. And we're this company that loves our employees and their family. And we're a part of the community. And that was true, not only from 30 years ago, but up to about, you know, 6 or 7 years ago. And then like any big, you know, company that starts to, you know, really expand and make a lot of money, they now have they're basically a corporation with a board. They have an executive board that kind of makes the decisions. Andy Berliner and his family are more and more kind of pushed back and pushed out and not really involved as they used to be. But he did used to go visit the assembly line and talk to the workers daily and any problems they have. Now they're all that has been completely stopped. And what they've been doing is, for the few folks that are supporting him at this warehouse, he went and had a big PR stunt where he went out and he had brought in his own translator, brought in his own PR folks, and sat down and talked to a group of about 10 to 12 people. And they all said what a great guy he was. And we said, well, great. How about we talk to these 100 employees that we have that have been injured and are begging just to sit down and explain what's going on at this facility? But he's so detached from it that, you know, I don't know if the money got to him or whatnot, but now it's not the same, you know, kumbaya family chain that they you know, claim to be. And so that's why I think we're getting all the support from these co-ops and everybody's joining. The boycott has happened. Want to just let it be known they're saying that the Teamsters did that. We would never start a boycott to possibly hurt the workers, you know, on their job, right? Even though at the end of the day, the boycott's not going to put a dent into these record-breaking profits, but it is getting their attention and putting them on notice. So all of our allies have pushed for that, and the workers have agreed to do that. So we're just kind of supporting that, but we're not leading that charge. But it each day we get more and more co-ops that ask about joining that.
Is there an actual union drive happening there? Or
there is. Yeah, there is. There, make no mistake about it, we're still doing that. But we thought where I shifted this to bring this to the media's attention and file the Cal OSHA complaint, file the B Corp complaint, which if you don't know what that was, I didn't know what it was 2 months either. But it's very important to the food processing industry. And so we have both those challenges going now. But we're just not doing a full on attack of, you know, unionizing, filing for an election, which just takes months. And then after that, you know, negotiating and ratifying a first contract deal, you're talking 12 to 16 months out. And we thought that this issue needed to be put out now. So make no mistake about it, we're organizing it, but we're not doing it in a typical fashion where we're going all out organizing blitz. We're going all out and saying, Andy Berliner, sit down and talk to us. Said, talk to your members, and they want us to just as advocates, and we'll see where it goes from there. And he refuses to do so. And then he's publicly now said, if they want to unionize, I'll stand out of the way. It's up to them, you know, and that's bullshit because, sorry, I don't freaking swear enough, but
that's all right.
I'm a Teamster. So, but if you're standing out of the way, why are you paying thousands and thousands of dollars for union busters to come in and talk about how awful the union is?
Well, Tony, he said he would stand out of the way. Didn't say about those guys that he would pay.
Yeah, good point.
what are there other facilities? I mean, how many employees does the company have overall?
I couldn't tell you that overall, but yeah. So they have a facility in Oregon. They have a facility in Santa Rosa, and obviously, and they have a facility in San Jose, and one other one out of state. So they're, I would, you know, collectively on just those four places, for sites, I would say that there's at least, you know, 12 to 1500 total employees.
Is there any reason to believe, have you contacted any of the or has anybody contacted workers at these other facilities? And like, is there any reason to believe that it's just this one facility where they are being overworked to the point where they're getting injured? as opposed to the other facilities. I mean, I can't imagine that they're like, well, this is the one where we'll expect a 25% increase in productivity from where we were from workers. The other ones, we'll just keep it the same way.
Yeah, good point. So we I can't really leak too much what we're doing, but we're involved in all four. I will say this is by far the worst. The one in Santa Rosa, the one we're concentrating on, and I think that has to do with that's where the majority of their products come from. So the pressure to produce, that's the number one site that has to make things happen for this company. So I think that's why it's worse. I don't think they necessarily say, oh, we're gonna make this one bad and make this other one good, but
right.
it's definitely the same, you know, corporate structure has come in. It's no longer family owned. And like I said, you know, we're family and, you know, we take care of everybody and listen to everybody's concern. It's so detached from that, but there are definitely issues at these other locations, but by all means, the Santa Rosa is the most extreme.
Let me ask you this. There was a story, today, that the National Labor Relations Board is telling Starbucks they got to rehire 7 baristas that they fired in, I think it was in Tennessee. They had also found the other day that Starbucks had illegally, I think, terminated some baristas up in Buffalo. And there was a ruling that, you know, the folks from the ALU found, you know, that the National Labor Relations Board said you can organize on site. Are these type of changes that from the outside look small? I mean, if I'm not involved in organizing, how much of a difference, how helpful is this? I mean, I got to imagine Amy's, someone at the you know, on the board level or the C-suite is aware that the National Labor Relations Board seems to be paying more attention to these things.
Absolutely. And you know, I think we all know, you know, nationally, the unions, you know, up to a couple of years ago, were at the lowest level, you know, since what, the 70s or what it was. But I feel like the comeback is that because of the pandemic, I think folks are realizing their value and are saying, wait a minute, you know, the unions are helpful. We do have somebody that could speak on our behalf. So yeah, all of this stuff is great. I think even bigger than the Starbucks one, that's doing a little bit out of a time, that the Amazon win in Staten Island was huge, right? Against the big giant, and with Amazon. And that's obviously for the Teamsters, that's we have our eyes on Amazon, you know, more than anybody. So, I think what's happening is, you know, you got to remember too, the labor board, because of the change and, you know, the shifting to, you know, Trump being out and Biden, and now Biden's getting his people in, they're obviously more pro-union, and Trump, you know, has come off as anti-union. And so that helps too, that you got folks sitting in these seats that are actually going to make moves. And that's why you're seeing kind of the shift, because a lot of people didn't realize that the second you get a new administration, all these the labor board still had positions that extended a year beyond. So it wasn't going to just happen the snap of a finger. And that's what you're seeing too, I think, is the shift that they're more, you know, labor friendly. And that's why these charges, because the charges get filed all the time. And a lot of times they get thrown out. You're not hearing about it. You're seeing these little small victories. And that's kind of showing from the administrative back into the unions. But also, at the end of the day, you know, President Biden's not the union. I'm not the union. It's these workers who decide they want to form their own union. And they're starting to see, you know, like I said, I think because of the pandemic, it's saying, wow, I think unions are more prominent and they're needed, and they can help us get what we want. And that's why you're seeing all these different organizations that have never been unionized starting to say, hey, we could unionize. And another perfect example is our local 665 in San Francisco is the first to, we organized 460 sales agents at AAA, and that's never been done before. And people assume, because we're Teamsters, when we say AAA, they think we got the tow truck drivers. We actually have the folks sitting in the office, you know, getting policies done every single day, whether it's life, you know, home, auto, and that's never been done before. And they're actually not your typical blue collar. They're white collar workers. They make a good amount of money. Their main concern isn't money. Their main concern is job protections, because they see, similar to Amy's Kitchen, a line drawn in the sand where, hey, all of a sudden since things changed 6-7 years ago, we're starting to feel pushed out and see you bringing up folks to do our work for a fraction of the price. So they see right through this stuff. And I think this is what's really been a boom for labor in general these last 18 months.
What can folks in this audience do to help those people working at Amy's?
They could do to help is, as you see, throwing anything on social media is great now, right? Anybody sitting in their home could help and boycott Amy's. But just we're saying to not buy.
Somehow we got you frozen.
Shoot.
Oh, we just lost Tony. Maybe he'll jump back in 1 second. But we will put links, folks. We'll get back with Tony and links to this. But keep your eyes out for actions that are going taking place at Amy's. And, you know, right now this seems to be as much about fighting a publicity war as anything else. So we will put links in our description at YouTube and in our podcast and at majority.fm.
Yeah, and monitor that boycott too. It's always like I think people rush to boycott versus not boycott, and it's actually a strategic thing you need to take cues from the workers and the union organizers on. So,
and the way to do that too is if that Amy's is that type of brand where a lot of co-ops carry Amy's. Mm-hmm. And you go to the co-op board of your co-op market and talk to them, and they will more often than not, like, that's the way to do it. They start getting calls from different administrators of co-op markets, and that's how they know this is going down. All right, we'll get that information from Tony, and we'll put it in the links, and we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back we'll be talking to India Walton, former mayoral candidate in Buffalo, should have been mayor of Buffalo, and senior strategic organizer at Roots Action. We're talking about student debt. Something's going to go down in the next couple of weeks on this, folks. So now is the time to get activated. We'll be right back. We are back. Sorry for the delay. A little bit of technical difficulties. Back on the Majority Report. I'm Sam Cedar here with Emma Vigeland. I'd like to welcome to the program India Walton. She is a former mayoral candidate in Buffalo. We still are a little angry about that whole situation, frankly. We're hoping that you would win. Now a senior strategic organizer at Roots Action. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me, Sam. I'm happy to be here.
So, right now, and you give me a sense of this, but my sense is from what I've read in terms of press accounts that the Biden administration, there's basically, I don't want to overstate this, but there's a fight within the Biden administration right now as to what they're going to do about student debt. It's pretty clear they're going to do something. But that seems to range from like a dollar figure amount and means testing and larding it up with all these sort of like hoops and jumps and basically, you know, the qualifications of what they end up presenting, it seems, could be like sort of override the political aspects of it and also, frankly, the functional aspects of it. What's your sense of what the state of play is right now?
I think the state of play, because I choose to be very hopeful, is that we'll see broad cancellation across the board, because that's what we're shooting for. And I think as an organizer at heart, we want what we're actually asking for. I think at minimum, we're going to see 50,000 in non-means tested cancellation.
You have more faith than we do, right? Because didn't Biden just say that he thinks 50,000 is off the table? I mean, that's what Chuck Schumer and Elizabeth Warren are hoping for, are pushing for. But for my, I'm fearful of these forces within the administration that want to tailor it so narrowly that it pisses everybody off and does not achieve any of the goals they're trying to set for the most part.
If the administration is watching the polls in those approval ratings, they'll make sure that they're doing something to reattract not only younger voters, but 22% of student loan debtors are people who are over the age of 50 also. So this is a far-reaching issue. Lots of people are affected by it. And if the Democrats have any chance of maintaining a majority, then, you know, the administration has to act because people are disenchanted and frankly pissed.
All right. Well, give us a sense of like of first, let's say this scope. I mean, how many millions of people are we talking about are now in debt to the U.S. government? Let's just be clear here. The U.S. government is making money off of people getting more educated.
Right.
And how many millions of people are we talking about?
More than 45 million. The last estimate was about 46 and a half, 47 million Americans owe some form of student debt.
And we're talking how much money?
We're talking about $1.7 trillion. And not only does the U.S. government make money off of this, but think about the private loan financiers who've been preying on student borrowers for decades. Personally, I had applied for income-based repayment on multiple occasions and been thrown back into forbearance. So while I thought I was paying down on my principal, it was really only going toward interest. So we've seen multiple cases of private loan servicers really misinforming and preying upon student loan borrowers.
Well, the nature of it is predatory. I mean, it's inherently predatory to require a loan to get an education, in my opinion. But secondly, a lot of times, I don't know when you signed, you know, your initial documentation on this or contract on this, but like 18, 19-year-old kids who don't have a full understanding of what they're signing up for.
Emma, not only was I 18 years old, but I was also a mother, right? So when we talk about like people who carry student loan debt, people like me, I needed to take out loans to be able to maintain my rent, to buy a winter jacket for my child, to pay for childcare and different things like that. So you're absolutely right. To expect an 18-year-old, I have 20-year-olds in my house right now that don't have a damn clue, right? And I don't want them signing any contracts or signing up for any credit cards because it carries such weight, and it's so hard to overcome when you finally are old enough to understand what you've gotten yourself into. So in my opinion, student debt is just illegitimate across the board.
And we should say, not only is there an incentive by these loan services, you know, to hide the ball, essentially, and to collect the fees and to run up interest. I mean, we saw this in the context of the housing market and crash. But the number of people I have spoken to who start out with, I don't know, $20,000, $30,000 worth of loans, and then it ends up being years later, $40,000, $50,000, they've been paying off the loan for sometimes 5, 10, 15 years, and they are actually $10,000 or $20,000, $30,000 more in debt than they were in terms of the principal. It's stunning. How much? I mean, I don't know what your situation was in that regard, but how much of that are you running into in your work on this?
It's a very common occurrence for a person to owe more 10 years after the original amount of their debt. Like I said, my personal story, when I thought I was in income-based repayment, I was actually in forbearance. So, you know, I paid far less on my debt than I thought I was paying. And these are stories that are being told all over the country, across all socioeconomic backgrounds, educational, you know, people who majored in nursing, people who majored in business, you know, all have the same issue. So, you know, I think that now is a time in history where we're coming to a reckoning and knowing that our government is responsible for so many injustices. And it's time to undo that, actively undo it, put as much effort into undoing the harm as you put into creating these systems that have kept people from upward social mobility.
I want to go through, you know, I think that most people are aware, and certainly I feel like within the context of the Biden administration and, you know, sort of the things they're listening to, at least, you know, on the two sides, I think most people are aware that there is very little controversy over the idea that relieving folks of this debt, it's good for the economy. It's good for society at large because you want people to be able to go into professions that aren't going to, you know, they're not just doing for the money, because you want people to be, you know, social workers and teachers, and you want people to be entrepreneurs and to take risks and whatnot. You don't want them just looking for jobs that are necessarily high paying. I think people also understand that, like, when I went to college, 30 years ago, not only was college less than a quarter of what it costs now, in many instances, just the financing of debt was just much less necessary, and much less widespread. But let's deal with some of the myths that are out there. Like, exactly, like, who are these people? Because I think people don't understand that some of the biggest cohort of holders of this debt are Black women, women of color, both because, A, they're bumping up against a ceiling at work that is both a function, or at least perceived as a function, of education. And so you got a lot of people going back to college or going to college for the first time as they're older, or, you know, at 18, and they're risking it all because, you know, supposedly that's what we've all been told. You just get your college education and then it's all ahead of you.
Yeah, I think that, you know, some of the myths are this is going to forgive student loans for doctors and lawyers and rich people and Ivy League students, when the fact of the matter is 99% of people who have student loan debt did not attend an Ivy League school, right? I don't come from wealth. My mother wasn't able to pay for my school, so I needed to take out loans for myself. And people who carry the majority of this debt are folks who went back to school to be able to better participate in the American economic system. And our people who are nurses, who are teachers, who have not had all of the societal advantages as some other demographics. So I think that not only is debt cancellation good for the economy and, you know, going to be good for the Democrats holding on to their slim majority, but it's also a matter of racial and gender justice. You know, we still are making 75 cents on the dollar as compared to, you know, white men. So if this is a way to help folks be able to purchase their first home, pursue furthering their education, or meet even making investments, you know, if I didn't have to pay student loans, I would be able to help my children go to college and not have them be in the same situation. We're talking about a generational problem that can be addressed right now. And I think that the president should do it right now.
And frankly, too, some of these colleges and some of the institutions that are predatory, like these for-profit colleges, the payoff for going there is not what is advertised. The numbers in the study are I'm blanking on it off the top of my head, but often times people lose money going to these schools more often than not. Can you just talk about how your work has, you know, touched on or seen the effects of some of these predatory for-profit colleges in particular?
Yeah, I mean, I won't take credit for the work. I just kind of came on the scene with this viral tweet, right? Like, what would you do without student debt? But folks like the Debt Collective for many years have been exposing how for-profit universities have exploited and taken advantage of poor people, of Black and brown people. And folks, I mean, just think about all of the people who went to Trump University thinking that they were graduating with a business degree and later on found out that, you know, they were being scammed. So, you know, I think that recent settlements against these private colleges and universities that have made people whole are a small step forward. But if we can have broad cancellation across the board, that'll be even more justice for a lot more people.
I want to circle back to what you just said about in terms of like the debt that people take out to go to college is that is where we see the most amount of equality, right? Like a white guy, 18-year-old white guy takes out $30,000 worth of debt. African American woman takes out $30,000 debt. There we see the equality. The problem is that degree that they both earn, even if it's at the same university, does not have the same amount of value. So the debt itself is actually greater for that woman of color. And this dynamic plays out and out because they just will not have the same, even with the same, similarly situated, went to the same college, got the same degree, similarly situated, will not have, for myriad reasons, the same earning potential. So that debt is in practice much greater. And so this becomes in many respects a social justice issue as well, doesn't it? And of course, we can find individual examples where this doesn't hit. But if we charge the government with going out and finding the individual examples and weeding it out, it's going to be far more costly to the government. And in the end, it's why would we do that? Like, what is so sacrosanct about charging people so that they can be educated and be a better citizen or, have a better life?
And that's the point, right? There are so many people who are saying, well, if we cancel student debt for you all, what about people who come in the future? It's like make college free, right? Student debt is an illegitimate debt. Being educated is a service to this country that is public service, no matter what field you choose to go into. College should be free and affordable for every single person that lives in this country, no matter what, because being smarter just makes us all better. And we know that, you know, from a social standpoint, people who have access to higher education just have a broader thought process. Tend to believe in science, and we wouldn't have a lot of the issues that we did if everyone had access to a quality education.
What have you seen any evidence that, because one of the things that we hear out of those people who don't want to cancel this debt is that, like you say, there's going to be resent. I paid off my college debts, and I'm going to be mad because I did the right thing, and if I had just not paid off my college debts, they'd be paid off by somebody else. Have you seen any evidence, any polling, anything that suggests that generically speaking, Democrats or specifically Joe Biden will lose a single vote? I imagine he'll lose a single vote, but But is there been any data that you've had to confront over the course of this organizing that has showed that politically this is a loser?
I have not. This is wildly popular with more than 60% of voters agreeing on both sides of the of the aisle. And as many people that say they paid their debt off and were responsible and made good decisions, there are equally as many people who say, I paid my student debt off and I believe that it should be forgiven because, you know, if we know the solution is here now, there's a really cute graphic where there's a person who's laying on a train track. And the track gets rerouted and the person who was run over said, well, what about me? Right. But, you know, we found cures for diseases. We have immunizations. It doesn't mean that you don't have access to what is great and healthy and progressive about this country because it wasn't available to you before. Lots of people died of polio, but that doesn't mean that I don't believe in the polio vaccine so that we can prevent that from happening in the first place. And that's right. An extreme example. But yeah. When we talk about economic health and viability, it relates.
I think you've used that example before. Yes. On the show. Yeah.
My father has a scar right here because he had strep throat as a kid. And this is before antibiotics, and they had to like put in some type of breathing. I've never heard him say, I resent the development of antibiotics because I had to have like a tracheotomy or whatever it was but also, has anyone heard a single complaint in any sector anywhere over the fact that people have not been repaying their student debts over the since the beginning of COVID? Like, I mean, if there was this huge cohort of people waiting to pounce because this is such bad politics, why don't we see people protesting in the street that the 45 million people, 46 million people now who owe student debt have had a moratorium on repayments? We haven't, because people don't actually really care that way.
They're talking about the Fox News anchors. That's who they're talking about.
I guess so.
Right, you know.
But we didn't see that with the, you know, the PPP business loans either, that people have – a lot of people got those forgiven for payroll. I mean, so this happens all the time. It's just a question of who is it going to happen to?
That is spot on. You kind of took the words right out of my mouth. We didn't mind PPP loans being forgiven for wealthy people who then went out and bought yachts. But when it's something that benefits poor people, particularly poor people and working class people of color, then it's time to sound the alarm. And it's like I said, it's wildly popular among Americans and among voters, but there's a small sector of folks who are controlling the narrative, who are able to push these falsities out, and people begin to repeat that, even though it may not necessarily be true.
India, where can people, I mean, like, are you guys involved at Roots Action? Are you doing anything right now specifically to make the, you know, apply pressure at the White House?
Yes, we're amplifying. We're asking our list to continue to call, to write letters, to show up for direct actions. We don't organize actions on our own because there are enough people doing it that we can just support that work. So I'm encouraging folks to follow us at Roots Action. Visit our website at rootsaction.org, withoutstudentdebt.us, and also follow the Debt Collective on Twitter so that as actions come up in D.C., when folks are around, they can join in that.
We'll put the number of the White House, too. I mean, a bunch of calls into the White House at this point. There is no doubt in my mind that that's going to at least be a factor in these deliberations, which we know are happening right now. I mean, they even put out the Department of Education white paper on Biden's authority to do it. It was all redacted, every single bit of it, but that suggests that he can do it. Otherwise, they would have put this to bed a long time ago. India Walton, Senior Strategic Organizer at Roots Action, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, folks. We will put that number up. Do we for the White House? Do we even have it now? Maybe we can just tell people what it is and also put it up as a graphic.
Do we want to give the switchboard or like the comment line? What do you think is
both?
Yeah, so the switchboard is 202 206-456-1414. And the comment line is 202-456-1111.
All right, read them back one more time, both of them.
Switchboard's 202-456-1414, and the comment line is 202-456-1111.
That's pretty easy. 456-1111, 456-1414.
I feel like I was leaving a voicemail there.
202. Folks!
Again, my name is Bradley.
Please cancel all student debt. You can get back to me at 917. Folks, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. Found out today that, and look, you have never, ever heard or seen me whine on Twitter that we got demonetized because of this or that we're being shadow banned, because I have news for you. It's all bullshit.
Marketing.
It's all marketing bullshit. The for the most part, most of the videos that we do about abortion are demonetized.
Oh.
And we're not going to stop. I don't give a shit. If we were going to stop putting out it, and I also don't care. I mean, like, it is perfectly, I understand why maybe advertisers don't want to be involved with abortion because they think it's icky or whatever. That's their business decision. But the bottom line is we're going to keep putting those videos out. I don't give a shit. If I cared about that, I would have still been doing sitcoms, frankly, if that was what was going to drive our decisions around here. And the reason why we can take that attitude and not go out of business is because of our members. Mm-hmm. So you can go to jointhemajorityreport.com, become a member today. And if you are someone who doesn't have the resources but wants access to the fun half, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Put in the subject line, fun half. We will hook you up. As a member, you can find a link to the fun half show of on video, anyways, at majority.fm at the top of that day's post. So I want to see – this is – I'll walk you through this. I want to see Monday's fun half. Okay, I go to majority.fm, I log in as a member, and then I go to Monday's post, and there's the link at the top. That's the way it works. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off from our friends at Just Coffee. Buy the Majority Report blend. You will not be disappointed. We got merch. We're going to have merch in Boston. I'll sign that merch for you.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I won't. Yes, I will.
Emma, you got to be like, that's a two-tier, like you got to do double merch purchase. For the
You got to hand me a fistful of cash
exactly.
And then I'll do it.
Matt, what's happening in the Matt Leckian media universe?
Yeah, tonight Nick Bolin, a Colorado journalist, is on to talk about an article he wrote in The Guardian about some organizing workers in Colorado and Denver at a Starbucks. And we didn't know when we recorded the interview, but last night that they voted unanimously to form a union. So
wow.
it was a sort of thing where The Guardian wanted him to write it beforehand, because once the vote actually takes place, nobody cares to like learn about the actual people involved. It's just like, did they win or did they lose? So we were, you know, it's the sort of thing where we thought they were going to win, but seeing that they voted unanimously is a really good sign. And we hear the story of, I mean, all the different things that Howard Schultz's Starbucks has put them through, including interrogating one guy who took food out of a sort of like expired food thing that was going to be given to homeless people because it's hard to pay for your rent there in Denver. And that led to an inquisition as to management becoming aware that there was a homeless person working at the Starbucks, and they tried to figure out who that person was.
Jesus.
So like, it's really, I mean, a really characteristic of Starbucks, I guess I'll say. So check that out tonight, 8 Eastern, patreon.com/leftreckoning.
Jesus. When Howard Schultz wanted to go all in on that Holocaust analogy, he really was upping it, right? People stealing food from the garbage, from the over, you know, the expired bin.
Yep.
Jesus. All right, folks. 646-257-3920 is the number. We are only, I'm very excited. 4 days? 4 days away. 4 days away.
What, it starts at 2, Thursday, right? Friday, so we're Saturday, basically
Sunday. Holy crap! 4 days away from the big live show in Boston.
Whoop.
I got like 14 different ways I want to start out the show.
I'm looking at the weather right now. 81 on Saturday.
Wow.
79 on Sunday.
You know what? Ronald Reagan sent me a present that he wants to wear. He wants me to wear. And like, you know, I was going to put it over my shirt because it's a sun's out, guns out type of situation.
Yeah. Well, then the guns are not out. But
right. But if it's going to be that warm.
That's
I'm
the
not,
time.
Listen, I'm not above trying to sell a couple of tickets because you will see my not exactly perfectly shaped biceps at the show. But you will see biceps, but you have to look very carefully under the layers in which I protect them.
Right.
They're so precious.
From the cold.
I think you undersell those arms, Sam. They were pretty toned in September.
Wow.
Yeah, someone's kissing some ass, but I don't think so. Folks, see you in the fun app, 646-257-3920. 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second.
Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt.
Who?
What is up, everyone?
Nomi Keen.
You did it. Let's go, Brandon.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women.
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But, dude, you want to smoke this? Set an egg?
Yes.
Hi, me? This me?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm going to go start life.
You libertarians.
They're so stupid though.
Common sense says of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him!
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96 I want to say.
857-210-3501. One half. 3/8.
9/11 for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion.
Sold.
It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less of
it. But let me say this.
Poop. You can call it satire. Sam goes, it's satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled, folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock, we're already late, and the guy's being a dick, so screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.